thank you for joining us on Following the Way, a podcast about following Jesus, being shaped by His way, and learning to live freely and faithfully.
Welcome to the very first episode of Following the Way podcast. I'm JC Groves, and if you are listening to this, you are not here by accident. This podcast exists for one simple reason, because a lot of us have experienced freedom in Jesus, but we're still learning, in all honesty, how to walk with Jesus. It doesn't matter if you've been saved a week or 10 years or 50 years. We're all learning how to follow the way of Jesus. And you know, for years, the church has done a great job about talking about how to get saved, about crossing the line of faith, but we haven't really done a great job talking about what comes after that. How do you actually live it out on Monday? How do you live out your faith when rubber meets the road? How do you follow Jesus when life is messy and faith feels complicated and formation is slow? Jesus didn't say, pray a prayer and just hang tight until heaven. Now, he said, follow me. Not just believe or admire or agree with me, but he said, follow me. And this podcast, it's not hype, it's not hot takes, it's not Christian noise. This is real conversations about what it looks like to move from freedom to formation, to actually become, in the words of John Mark Comer, an apprentice of Jesus in real life. And we're calling this Following the Way because before Christianity was called Christianity, it was simply called the way of life, a way of seeing the world, a way of becoming a better human in the world as we follow and become more like Jesus every day. So my friend, if you are tired of shallow faith, if you're hungry for depth, if you want more than just inspiration, you want some transformation, you're in the right place. And here's the thing, I don't do this alone, because following Jesus is never meant to be a spectator sport or a solo project. Formation happens best in the context of community. Growth happens in relationships, and this podcast is going to be better because of the voices that are sitting at the virtual table with me. I'm in South Georgia. No, I'm in North Georgia, but South Georgia for these guys. We're coming from Michigan and Vermont. I'm joined by two guys who I respect. I love doing ministry with. James Bell is a pastor, a writer, a thinker. He's a guy who is passionate about helping people not just know about Jesus, but become more like Jesus. He pastors up in Michigan. And Chris Gepner is a pastor, a church planner, a disciple maker, somebody who is deeply committed to evangelism and helping people live out this thing called faith in the real world up in Vermont. Guys, I'm pumped to have you here. For people listening, I want them to hear your hearts, your stories. This conversation is going to be incredible as we begin this new chapter, this new podcast, Following the Way podcast. So fellas, welcome to the Following the Way podcast. You're here.
Only took us 6 months.
6 months.
We have been trying to get a whole college football season. A whole college football season.
See, we had to start after college football.
We did, because I don't like Chris during football season. For those that are listening, Chris is sitting here in a Miami Hurricanes hoodie. And if you know anything about me, you know I'm a diehard Florida State, we're horrible Seminoles fan. And so I don't talk to Chris during football season, but our text group has been blowing up, that's for sure. Chris, how does it feel to spend $4 million and still not win an ACC or national championship?
Hey, you know, it's not bad, especially after Florida State spent all that money on a lawsuit to give us that money. Beautiful.
Oh, man.
Thank you, Florida State.
We've had two of the worst years in football history. I don't get it. James, what's Michigan football like with your coach right now?
Yeah. Yeah, being a Michigan fan, I don't want to talk about lawsuits or scandals at all.
Oh, goodness. Football season is going to be fun around here. Do y'all like basketball?
Oh, yeah.
You're an NBA guy, right?
I'm an NBA guy, but I follow college as well.
Yeah. I'm headed up to Durham, North Carolina next Monday. Tim Orris, a good friend of ours. You know Tim.
Yeah.
I called him. I said, hey, Tim, I'd love to bring my boys to Cameron Indoor for the first time. They've never been to a Duke game, and I'm a huge Duke basketball fan. He said, I got you. So we're heading up there to see Syracuse and Duke play at Cameron Indoor next Monday. I'm pretty pumped about that. Well, let's introduce y'all to the Following the Way podcast family. James, we're going to turn the mic over to you. Introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you, your story, and then Chris can introduce himself.
Yeah, my name is James. I pastor up in Fenton, Michigan. So you have to drive south to get to Canada, where I'm from. And so we were just talking a little bit earlier, and it's been negative 20 up here. It's so Georgia, JC was showing up telling us it's 50 degrees and he's freezing. So that is a summer day for us in Michigan. We've been at our church about 10 years, and we started as a we came in as a church renewal, and we have seen God do awesome things. I have 5 boys, and so if you hear anything in the background, that is my sons. I told them to be on their best behavior as I'm shooting this from my house. But I have 5 boys: Titus, Timothy, Tatum, Toby, and Theo, and all T's.
Man, that's some T's right there.
Yeah. Well, poor, they're pastor kids, so they're all TJBs too, alliterated. Yeah, they're gonna have childhood trauma stories when they're adults of being a pastor's kid. So my wife Susanna, we've been married 15 years, and so it's just been a journey. I was trying to put our story together in just a short time, and our journey has been, it's too much to put into just a short time. But we started off ministry. I was saved pretty later in life. I was 21 years old. I was actually an atheist, not just a Gnostic or believe that there was a God and didn't know, but pretty a staunch atheist, heavy into intellectualism, frat guy, you know, heavily into the party scene, drinking drugs. So one night late at night, I was in a jail cell. I was in a jail cell, got out, was hit in the head with a crowbar, robbed, went to the hospital. A guy came to the hospital and said, God told me to come talk to you. It was like 10 o'clock at night. I'm across country. Basically had an answer. It was an apologist. Basically had an answer for every question. That started me on a journey of just investigating the faith, resurrection. And about 6 months later, I came to faith in Christ, and my whole life was turned around. After that, I went to the closest church near me, and it ended up being more of a fundamentalist church. And so early on in my faith, I was kind of baptized right into a fundamentalist culture. And for someone like me that came out of a rough life, it gave clarity, right? It gave a sense of like this innocence. It gave sense of like, this is right and that is wrong. These are the right people, those are the wrong people. And so in that season, that's what I was kind of baptized into, that discipleship of fundamentalism. Hyper separatism, you know, the holiness is separate, and you know, not unto, it's separate from. And so that led us down a journey of finding my wife, seminary, leaving fundamentalism, and then kind of even leaning a little bit into skepticism, textual criticism, and then we kind of found our way back to Jesus, and he kind of found us back. And we have been enjoying it ever since. We've kind of just realized that Jesus is enough. He's sufficient. His way is enough. It doesn't, you know, we don't have to live in fear. We don't have to live in doubts. And we've been just enjoying following Jesus. We've been at our church 10 years, and we've been just following Jesus the best we can, and as humble as we can, and the best we can up here in Michigan. And so that's a little bit of our story. That's in a bird's eye.
James, I'm sitting here listening to your story, and it's so moving. It reminds me of why we do what we do, right? So anyway, thanks for sharing your story, James. And my name's Chris, and I live in Vermont, but my story, my origins are not here. I'm actually from South Florida. I was, you know, raised in West Palm Beach, Florida, beach bum. My family came to Christ when I was about 7 years old in a fundamentalist environment. Isn't that interesting? Because the fundies, man, preaching the gospel, you know, never let up, right? But my dad kind of led the way. And that's very important to my formation, is my father coming to Christ, but modeling that. And the life that he came out of, he was an alcoholic and abusive. And he had a very radical shift and change in his life. And it really had a radical change and shift on my life for long term. As I grew up, I ended up at 16 years old, really sensing God had a call in my life. And it scared me, because I was like, what does that look like? I don't want to, you know, I'm not that smart. I'm a kind of a, like I said, I'm a beach bum. I'm not high intellect. I just love Jesus, and I want to see other people meet Jesus and grow in Jesus. But it's funny how the Lord uses people like me, even as I proceeded forward. And I was about 25 years old, 24, 25. The Lord used somebody to speak into my life to remind me of my call. And so that was when I was at the time working at Costco Wholesale. I worked there for 10 years. I call that my seminary experience. And while I was there, I met my wife, Penny, whom I've been married to 27 years. And we have two adult sons. And I'll tell you what, man, my wife is, you guys both would attest to this, that our wives are really foundational and the backbone to why we get to do what we do. Like, it's like a partnership, a silent partnership oftentimes, right? But ministry-wise, this is really interesting. I actually cut my teeth in ministry at a Calvary Chapel. It was a place, and I think we would all agree, it's a very intermediate space for people coming out of a pretty staunch environment theologically, and even in that religious environment. And Calvary Chapel was refreshing in the 90s. That's where I kind of cut my teeth on ministry, had a call, worked in a church plant in Jupiter, Florida. Loved that. Thought I'd be there forever. My family was down there. And then lo and behold, we adopted our children in 2008. 2 years later, the Lord called us to, of all places, Vermont. And we planted a church up here in 2010. We've been here 16 years. And we've seen God do a crazy work. Church planting is definitely, it's brutal, but you know how it is. Brutiful. I've heard it put that way.
Brutiful.
And I'll tell you, man, to see what God has done here over the last 16 years is none short of a miracle. And I recall it was early on when I was being stirred to come up here. I just remember the story of Jesus walking on water while the disciples are on a boat in the Sea of Galilee in a storm. And Peter was the only disciple to get out and walk on water. And oftentimes in our environments, we always focus in on, he fell through the water and Jesus had to pull him out. And I heard somebody speak on this right around the time we moved here, right before we moved here. He said, why don't we focus on the fact that Peter walked on water? Why don't we focus on that? Because he's the only human besides Jesus who walked on water in the history of the world. And the rest of the disciples watched a miracle take place. And that stirred me up. It's like, I want to be a part of a miracle. Even if I have to fall in the water, I want to walk on water a little bit. And so I feel like this whole journey of planting a church here in Vermont has been a walk on water experience. And oftentimes, and JC, you know this, James, you know this, as pastors, we walk on water and sometimes we fall in. But man, what a miracle it is. And also to know that Jesus is there to pull us up. And so that's my story, man. Here I am in Vermont, where it is bitter cold and we have a lot of snow, just like James.
Yuck. Well, it's 50 outside today here in North Georgia, and I'm freezing, man. So I've been in ministry. August will be 25 years. Started my sophomore year in college serving in student ministry, and spent a long time in student ministry, working in some independent fundamental Baptist churches. Went to a Southern Baptist church plant here in North Georgia back in 2005, and that's where my wife and I got married. Long story short, man, we ended up in Salt Lake City, Utah. We were there for 3 years serving as youth pastor. That's a whole nother level of stuff. I look like Ray Charles in a bumper car trying to drive in snow. I left my Georgia tags on as long as I could because I was all over the place up there trying to learn how to drive in that. And we moved back here in 2000 and let's see, what would that have been? 2012. And worked at a multi-site church called Rockbridge Community Church, and I was a campus pastor for a multi-site church. And we gave my 30s. I turned 29 the day I started, day after I started, and I left at 39. I gave my 30s to being a multi-site campus pastor, and I loved it. But in 2019, we were building a brand new 40,000 square foot building. Our campus had grown. Things were getting incredible. I'm up on our property in October of 2019. This is before COVID hit. And it was very clear that God spoke and he said, JC, you're done. The assignment that I've had for you is to get this church, this campus of a multi-site church into this new building. And so I went to leadership at the end of 2019 and said, hey, I'm done. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I just know God's releasing us from this. And they said, where are you going? I said, I don't have a job. I just know that I'm my assignment here is done. Long story short, went through a couple possibilities, nothing worked out. And then this thing called COVID hits and the world shuts down. Nobody hires during COVID. But right in the middle of it, I get a call from a church in South Georgia, down in Statesboro, Georgia. And they said, we're looking for a college pastor. Things are kind of starting to open up and school's going to happen down here. So I went down. We loved it. We knew this is where we're supposed to be. And it just so happened, the way that God's timing and his kindness, we move into our brand new building the first Sunday of August of 2020 at the church I was campus pastor at. On Monday, they called and offered me the job. So I got to serve three Sundays in a brand new, sexy 40,000 square foot building. And then we quit on Monday and went down to South Georgia. We were down there for 2.5 years, loved it. Started college nights at Connection Church in Statesboro, Georgia. But my heart has always been here in Catoosa County in North Georgia. I love this place. And 25 years ago, it began to burn in me. It's a very religious place. We're in the buckle of the Bible Belt, if you will. But there's something about this area and these people. And you know, the best illustration I can give is like Nehemiah serving in Shushan, if that's how you say it. But his heart is in Jerusalem because the gates are torn down, the walls are destroyed. And even though I was serving in Utah, my heart was here. Serving in South Georgia, my heart was here. And so August of 22, my wife and I and our six kids, we packed up, moved back here with no job, no house, no money, just knew God was telling us to come back. And we got here in August, September, October. We started just sitting around having conversations with people, and folks were like, hey, are you going to start a church? And that was the last thing I wanted to do. Chris, I even talked to you during this time. I was like, I am not starting a church. I thought I was going to hit evangelism, was going to go out on the road and speak. I had quite a few speaking engagements, but just having conversations with people and relationships that have been built. And so Halloween night of 2022, we put the announcement out, and we met at a barn and had 72 people show up in a barn. And I was like, what in the world are y'all doing here? They said, y'all want to do this next week? So we did it again the next week, had 120-something show up and 15 kids. Listen, our first nursery was the rodeo arena, and we had kids chasing a cow out there while I'm preaching inside. I mean, it was the best children's ministry ever. Well, fast forward 4 weeks, we merged in with the church that had a 120-year-old building. There's about 8 people gathering in this church, and we took over. $4,500 a month rent, never missed a payment. Church began to grow, people getting saved, baptizing, following Jesus. Like, it was awesome. Grew out of that building. And a little over a year ago, we moved into the current building that we're sitting in here, and just continued to grow. We just baptized our 101st person in 3 years. It's been incredible. God's moving. Here we are. We're pushing 400 plus, which is awesome. But now, August 31st, the big multi-site church in Chattanooga has purchased our land and building. And so August 31st, we got to find a new home. And so y'all be praying for us. We'll keep you updated on here. But we're looking for a new place to meet. You know, it'd be easier if we were like a 50-person church meeting in a storefront of a Holiday Inn. But we got 400-plus that we got to move, and you can't just set up and tear down that quick. So that's kind of where we're at on this journey. It's been a fun ride, and I'm absolutely loving every single minute of it. It has been a fun, challenging ride. Chris, I'm glad you're on this podcast. Church planner, you know, I watched what you're doing up there at Riverbank Church in Vermont and seeing how God's blessing that and growing that. James, did you plant the church in Michigan, or are you just the pastor there?
No, I my heart really is in revitalization. So I love torture. Torture.
Yeah, you love torture. I don't have the capacity to do revitalization.
Yeah,
but
revitalization is it's a long, slow work. And yeah. So we started with about, I think my first Sunday was about 38, 42 people, and one under the age of 70. And so, yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun. Let's just say fun is probably the safest word to use.
See, I think the difference between me and y'all is, you know, we're here in a very religious, church heavy culture where everybody's a quote unquote Christian. You know, I know, Chris, just talking with you when we're up at Word of Life, like doing ministry in Vermont, you know, it's very, and even Michigan. I mean, I can't imagine going to Michigan, much less pastoring in Michigan. You know, I'm sure. What do y'all feel the difference is? Chris, you're from South Florida. Like, the difference in this culture of Jesus and church and following him. What do y'all feel the difference is in where you're at and where I'm at?
Yeah, I think the difference is, now, again, South Florida is like the sixth borough of New York. So,
yeah,
you know, it was different, but there is always, listen, there's always some sort of Judeo-Christian construct that had influence, always. When I moved here in 2010, one of the first things I realized is the Judeo-Christian construct has, it's probably two or three generations removed. So it's more of a humanistic construct, a more kind of mind science, academic, and there is no filter through the Judeo-Christian construct. And that's a difference because, in a way, it's good because you don't have any, you don't have anybody leaning on their religious laurels to, you know, they're convinced that they're, you know, a Christian just because they follow the guidelines. On the other side, man, the debates are heated sometimes, and the maybe even a little intimidating, to be honest with you. We're right in the shadow. I live 5 miles from Dartmouth College, and that's heavy influence here in our community and region, and that's intimidating. It's not anymore. It was when I first moved here as the beach bum, but being here 16 years, God's given favor. I will go back to that Judeo-Christian construct is non-existent, and I'm wondering what it's like in Michigan, James.
Yeah, Michigan. I would say it's a lot of skepticism, and I've lived in the South. I've lived in North Carolina, and you know, the buckle of the belt, maybe the belt of the Bible Belt, and where everyone is Christian or has a testimony of salvation, or their grandpa was a deacon, or, you know, where it's almost cultural. Up in Michigan, it is not cultural. It is more of a skeptical. You have many people that come from a background of education that I would say the generation of this, maybe the silent generation, or, you know, boomer even had a church background of some sort. But there's a lot of heavy, maybe Catholicism that would be like church is more of a tradition that you do on a Christmas and Easter, or it's a ritual that you participate in. But it's not something that many people, you have to come across as a more of an apologetic. The gospel is carried out across more of an apologetic. I always say the South is like an Acts 2 model, where most people have some sense of a foundation. I say, especially in Northern cultures, it's a much more of an Acts 17. Like, let's talk to you about the God that's the unknown God. And that's really kind of what it's like, I would say, in the North. You're starting from a different foundation of, you know, it's not God in the Bible. It's, is there a God? And how can we know there is even a God? And then if there is a God, which one, which religion? They all claim to have the right way and the truth. And how do we know what separates Christianity from other world religions and belief systems? And so I think up here, it's more of an Acts 17 model. It's like, let's start with, is there a God? And so much of the discipleship that we do in evangelism, we do, it's not necessarily rooted in decisions, and I always call it coffee shop discipleship. I meet with guys that are atheists, and we have coffee, and they come up with a lot of good questions. And I think it's a lot like Tim Keller's ministry. There's always a sense of apologetics in our at least in our sermons and our undertones of our ministry of our church. It's much more relational and much more apologetic in nature.
That's good. So building off that right there, I want to ask y'all this question. Like, we're saved by grace, not by performance. We get that. But grace isn't just a pardon. It is the power to be changed. And that's this whole concept of following the way of Jesus. Like, we're not just saved from freedom. We're saved, and freedom is part of being a follower of Jesus. But there's formation that comes. Why do you believe so many Christians stop at forgiveness but never move towards formation or becoming more like Jesus? There's a two-part of this question, because the second part I want to ask you, but that first part right there, why do so many Christians stop at forgiveness but never move towards discipleship or becoming more like Jesus, in y'all's opinion?
I think it's sometimes it's a part of our nature. Obviously, sanctification is not something that our flesh naturally desires to pursue. But I also think it's the constructs of our church in America. Because when I travel a lot and I'll speak, I work with pastors and churches and seminaries in Thailand and India. They don't seemingly have the same discipleship crisis that we do in the United States. Because A, they're not radically individualistic, and B, they're communal by basis of survival. And so I think those are framed into a culture. So I think it's a cultural thing. It's a way we construct our churches, is that we construct our churches to be active, but not necessarily intimate. And we have traded activity for intimacy within our churches and movement for maturity. So if we get people active and we get them moving, we have equated that with intimacy and maturity. And I think that's a great danger, because you can be active and you can be involved, and you cannot be mature or intimate with Christ.
Sure.
Yeah, to piggyback off that, I do believe that distraction might be one of the great crises of our faith. Mm-hmm. We are so distracted. I know I am. And I'm 53. And so I didn't grow up with a phone in my hand. I didn't grow up with a device. I remember writing letters and dial up and all that stuff. I remember all that, but I'm still distracted. Yet the generations now are growing up with all these, they're constantly distracted. And I do believe that plays into it. Right now, you guys probably recognize this. There's almost like a cultural moment, generationally speaking, where there's young men especially that are seriously curious about the faith. And if we don't steward it right, and I love what you were talking about, James, is creating environments where conversation, where it's intimacy, it's relationship. Yeah. And it's hard. Where I pastor a very large church. And so it is a very hard thing, because in a large church, distractions can creep in, right?
Yeah.
It's easy for people to just kind of be on the peripheral. And so we have to work hard at really creating those environments, especially in the cultural moment with these young men. So I was thinking about this personally. I was feeling the weight of it. I was like, man, I need to create something. I don't want to be the pastor who's in his office, who's just kind of, you see him on Sunday. And I'm very intentional to try to connect with some of these young men who are curious. So next week we're meeting here in my office, coffee, and their job, like, bring all your questions. Let's just talk and see what we can come up with. And creating those environments, I think, is really, really important, because they feel like it's not just me standing on a platform preaching at them, but I'm just there. That's just one part of my job. That's just one little piece of it. But I think you're right, James. It's like a consumer mentality here in the Western world. And then you add the distractions that are there. It's really going against us to help people, you know, grow in their faith. Now, I will say this, living in an environment where we're highly evangelistic, and I'm super old school. I preach, you know, week in, week out, invite people to the front. And I do think that I think it is important that we maintain that. But I also think on the back end of it, we're talking about formation, growth, what I call followership. We have to be intentional at creating next steps. And that's through relationship, not posts on your social to say, hey, we have a meeting this week, you should come. It's about interacting and inviting.
Yeah.
And so it is a cultural moment. Let's steward it. And at the same time, I do believe we have to be intentional with the relational side. I agree with James on that.
I think, Chris, you really hit something important there, because we've kind of created this culture where it's easy believism, but, you know, it's pray a prayer and you're in, like, high five, good to go. You know, we've almost made it to where, you know, I love the word you just used, followerism. Is that what you said?
Followership.
Yeah, I love that, because formation is slow. Oftentimes it's unsexy, but it's absolutely necessary if you think about it. It's quiet. It's repetitive. It's unimpressive to, you know, I think we've created such a culture where it's like, we go to church, we hear the preaching, we don't have a relationship, we don't grow, we just kind of, we ask questions. I know I grew up in a culture where you didn't ask questions. I mean, I didn't hear the word discipleship until I got into college. It was show up, sing some songs, hear a sermon, shout amen, wear your best suit, and go. You know, I had no idea what this concept of discipleship or becoming like Jesus was until I got into college. But that's where real life change happens. Who is it? Eugene Peterson said it's long obedience in the same direction. Like, it's becoming more like Jesus every day. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. I've been studying this week. I'm going through the book of Mark. And when Jesus invites his disciples in Mark chapter 1, so he has Peter and Andrew, and he says, come and follow me, right? And I'll make you fisher of men. And then just after that, he invites James and John. And it's the same language, but there's a little twist on that, which is really cool. I just, in my studies, again, first time I ever picked up on this, if you go and pull back the layers on that, Jesus is inviting James and John, hey, kill what you're doing and come and start a new life with me. Kill what you're doing. You're fishing for your the family business. Matter of fact, it's probably a very lucrative business because they had servants on the boat. Kill that and come follow me. And again, the language, the idea there is like, it's kill it.
Yeah.
Slit its throat. Shoot it in the head, whatever it is, kill that and follow me. We don't have that extreme of language in our invitation to followership. And I know why. It's because of the distractions. Why would I want to kill that? I got all these other good things. And it's like the appeal to the distraction is supreme in this culture, right? And so I do believe, though, let's go back to the cultural moment. And I think you guys agree. There's something about this young generation that's saying, wait, I kind of want to kill it.
Yeah.
How many young men do you know that have a flip phone now? I it's all the time. They're like, yeah, I got this new thing. I'm like, no. But it is a cultural moment. And it's like, let's steward this well. And it's inviting these young people, these curious ones, to kill it. And to come follow him. It's a radical, radical thing. And that's what Jesus modeled, right? That followership.
One of the passages that I think fits with this is Luke 10 with Mary and Martha. As Jesus is coming, Martha's encumbered about with a bunch of different things. And I think I look at our society, and you mentioned distraction. I think it plays into, I think there's distraction, and then there's the formation side of the way our churches have been assembled, especially coming out of the early 2000s into where we're at now, where I think this, like JC said, discipleship was not it was not something that you heard about, especially some of the circles we ran into. But we get busy. I think most Christians and most people in our churches, they're not distracted necessarily with the outright bad thing, the evil thing. It's the multipliers. It's the sports on the weekends. It's I got gymnastics. I got football. I got basketball. I got, I got my phone. I got social media. I got this podcast, this thing I got to do. And most people that I see, they're running to do a bunch of things that aren't necessarily bad. They're good. And I think you hit it with the family business. Nothing about that is bad or wrong, right, or evil, but it's just the multiplier of it. And we have so many people that are just consumed. The pace, I always say the pace of our culture dictates our discipleship. And, you know, I see it in my home because the temptation is, you know, as a pastor, you know, you got this small group, you got this activity, you got this event, you got this something, you know, someone wants you to sit in on a banquet, you know, then some guy in Georgia wants you to be on a podcast, and, you know, you got all this stuff that you got into.
My bad.
You know, and Jesus, he very bluntly said, look, there's one thing that's needful. And man, that last phrase, that this is one thing that is needful. When you think about that in the chaos of our culture, that one thing is truly needful, but that's the first thing we tend to neglect.
Yeah. We're calling this Following the Way podcast because the early Christians weren't called Christians first. They were called followers of the way. It wasn't just what they believed. It's what they lived and loved and suffered and served. And I think, Chris, to hit on your point, we have drifted so far from that way of life to a set list of ideas. It's because we're distracted. We've created this box, this cultural box in the church that following Jesus looks like this, but we're distracted by so much noise that we miss following Jesus completely. like totally surrendered. And I love that you're the way that you're talking. I mean, it's almost a not a callback to simplicity, but it's a callback to less is more, to follow Jesus wholeheartedly. You know, I had a professor, Dr. Jerry Hall, back in seminary, and he would ask us this question all the time. He would say, guys, if someone watched your life for a week, what would they say that you're following? And, you know, I've thought about that question quite a bit, because I was like, well, that's kind of legalistic. Like, you know, if they watch my life, what am I following? But, you know, I think it goes really hand in hand with what you two just said. Like, am I following the way of Jesus, or is it this idea of what I need to do to look busy to be a follower of Jesus?
When we look at discipleship from our leadership, we look at it through three different ways. If you look at the word, the way, it means the path, the route, the destination. And I think there's three characteristics that you really need to look at with discipleship. I think it's the direction that you're going, you know, that includes like the destination, right? That, I think you talked about it with easy believism, or I like to call it decisionism, where it's like, hey, I made a decision, now I'm a Christian. And it's like, now we just attend and we, you know, but there's a destination that is also ultimately that there's a path of sanctification that takes place. And I say, it's not just the path that you're on, but it's the way you live on that path and the method. So I always tell young men, I said, yes, the destination is ultimately heaven. Yes, there's a path of sanctification, but this really, discipleship is about your habits, your practices, your character. And I think it's killing some things. It's removing other things. It's prioritizing intimacy over activity. And I think that's hard to do, because what does that look like, right? What is maturity look like? And so I always tell them, there's going to be habits, there's going to be practices, there's going to be characteristics, there's going to be some things that you don't do. You know, there's going to be, and then I always say the way is how it's done. I think that's individual. Like, yes, it can be part of a corporate church, but as an individual person, how am I shaping my intimacy with Christ? And that's going to be different for me. That's going to be different from you. And I don't think we're helping, especially, I don't want to just focus on young men, but this younger generation, to find ways to be intimate with Christ. Cause it's not I can tell you, I'll be just honest. There's been years I've served in ministry that I have not been intimate myself with Christ. Mm-hmm. And I can do the things, I can pastor, I can preach, I can teach. But intimacy is something that it's very personal. And I think it's something that's developed through habits, through killing stuff, through removing stuff, through honesty, through confession. And the word in Hebrew, it's covenantal, it's communal. And I'll skip that for a little bit, but we can't do this outside of a community of disciples either.
Can't follow Jesus alone. You know, formation happens in relationship, not just quiet times. And Chris, I love that's what you said. You know, it's more than just standing on a stage and preaching, because we're so used to being preached at, but we're walking this journey together. And, you know, it's confession, it's accountability, it's encouragement, correction. That is the way of Jesus. And, you know, I think it's who we allow permission to speak into our lives along that. I love that you're, you know, Chris, you pastor a very large church, and the fact you're taking time to have, you know, men come in and sit on your couch in your office and have coffee with you. I think this is how we train, how we encourage, how we involve more to follow the way of Jesus. It's going to be on that personal level for sure.
And it goes back to the evangelistic side of this. And as you know, that's really my heart and soul and giftedness. And I have this like the tension of declared gospel and also the engagement relational. Mm-hmm. And one thing that we've done that I think it's learned and it's through conviction and growth is I do preach the gospel very clearly and call to respond. And mm-hmm. I do believe that declared gospel will always be a priority. It should be. I actually sat in a cohort of pastors, and I still do. It's the same cohort. And up here in the Northeast, it's a little different in some ways. You have people who have different persuasions and backgrounds. And I heard a guy, a well-known Northeastern pastor, say, you know, the declared gospel is dead. And that bothered me so much, because it never should be. Matter of fact, Paul said, woe to me if I do not declare the good news, right?
Amen.
It's a very important thing. But one thing that I've had to navigate through in my own formation, my own followership as a leader, is not creating a lazy church It just depends on me to be the declarer of the gospel. Actually, we should all be doing that. So we've been working hard and steadfast on equipping our people to share the good news. And so we just did a training on how to share your faith one-on-one. And we had the Three Circles guys come up from Florida, and it was awesome, man, to see that. And what I'm confessing is I'm growing in this too, because you can create a very lazy evangelistic church if you only depend on you, and you can create a very inward focused church if you don't declare the gospel. So it's again, a tension to manage. And I'm trying to manage that tension by empowering our people to share faith, because what I was recognizing is that we have this large church and people, we have a great invite culture, and they're just depending on me to preach the gospel so their friends could come to Jesus. And I was like, that's not good leadership from me. Mm-hmm. In that I'm just saying, hey, I keep doing that. It's like, well, we're going to keep doing that, but that's not the only, I mean, it's actually more important that you're sharing your faith. As a matter of fact, we're going to invest in that so much so that I want to flip it where more people are coming to faith and in taking their next step in their faith to the wild, you know, evangelism in the wild than on Sunday mornings, even though we're never going to stop doing it on Sunday morning. Again, right. This is part of that whole formational conversation. And I do think it starts with evangelism. We can't neglect evangelism and push it off to the side. I do think we have to continue the conversation of how can we get better? How can we form that, our evangelistic mechanism of our church? Because it does need to be proper. And I think if you're just depending, if I'm just depending on me, man, I'm not doing my church, I'm doing them a disservice. I'm not helping them in their own formation.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, and Chris, that's one of the reasons I'm glad you're on this podcast, is because I think sometimes what happens is in the church specifically, you know, we can have these pendulum swings. We go from one ditch to the other ditch. And so it's heavy evangelism with no formation, or heavy formation with no evangelism. And what you find is you're creating this pendulum swing where it's not healthy on either side. And there's a fine line to walk where evangelism, that's the good news of the gospel. If we don't proclaim the good news of the gospel, if we don't give people the opportunity to be changed by the rescue story, by the salvation power of Jesus and his shed blood, we're just gathering, you know, we've got to be rescued from something to something. Yeah. But if we also don't have the other side of that, which is rescued, now we become more like Jesus. We take up our cross daily and follow him. Like, and so that's where this, you know, we do a good job a lot of times in the culture that we all grew up in with our fundamentalist background, pray a prayer, repeat after me, get right or get left, you know, get sanctified or chicken fried, you know, drive a Ford, get the Lord, turn or burn, baby. Like, you know, we get them to an altar, we cry some tears, we do the Christian thing, but then following Jesus is kind of taboo. And so that's where, you know, this is coming around and saying, hey, evangelism matters. And I love your evangelistic heart, Chris. I love your rescue story. I love, you know, how God's doing that. That's important. And the other side is important. And as we walk this journey together of following the way of Jesus, all of this is encompassing and matters to, you know, because we're all, and all three of us, even though we've pastored for a long time in different stages, in different states, and we're all learning how to become more like Jesus on this journey of following him.
I just thought, you know, I think just to piggyback one, you know, there the tension there, I think the scripture holds to it. What is it? Soteria and matathia. So it's used interchangeably in the New Testament of the rescue of the gospel and I always call it the apprenticeship of the gospel. And I think both of those it's the healthy tension that each church must have and us as individuals. Sure. Yes, I have been rescued, but I have been saved. And I always tell young men that have been saved, I said, what are you saved unto? Because, you know, holiness, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, coming from our backgrounds, you know, where it gives us this clear, here's holiness, you know, those people are not holy, you know, these guys are, because we do certain things. But holiness is unto Christ, and it's Christ-likeness, and it's the way of Jesus, that he's my holiness, and being made more like him. And, you know, and I think that's the apprenticeship aspect of the gospel, is that I am being made more like him. And I've been rescued, but I've been rescued to be made unto like Jesus.
It's good.
Yeah, just one last thing to, I think that's great, because you can't have one without the other, right? There is no followership, apprenticeship, discipleship without evangelism, and there no evangelism without followership, discipleship, formation, apprenticeship. They're inseparable, and I think we can easily do is we separate them, and that's why we have dysfunction.
So part of the plan as we journey through this podcast with wherever we're going as a new podcast, we also want to give you some resources. For those that are listening, both Chris and James have resources available. We're going to be putting out some content. You can head on over to followingthewaypodcast.com. And guys, can you believe that followingthewaywaycom is available? Like,
what?
How all these years of Christianity, followingthewaycom was available. That blows my mind. Like, you'd think somebody
JMC was sleeping, man. JMC was sleeping. What's up with
that? He practiced this. He doesn't follow. I'm just kidding. But you can head over there. We're going to have a resource page that is being used. Of course, the man, the myth, the legend behind the scenes working, Justin Knight. He is putting things together on our website. And there's going to be some resources there, some books. Of course, for those that follow on social media, James Bell is a prolific writer. And many of you have shared his content on social media. And James, there's not a day I don't get on social media and see some random sharing your stuff. And I'm like, how do they know James? And I'm like, do you know? No, but he popped up on my social media. I'm like, this guy is everywhere. I got a buddy in Venezuela who is being really persecuted right now with a lot of stuff. And he shared something of yours the other day. And I was like, do you know James Bell all the way up in Michigan? He's like, no clue who he is. I'm like, this is unbelievable. So you just pop up all over the place stuff. But got resources that we're going to have for you. And I'm excited to see where this journey for all three of us and for the Following the Way podcast family is going to go. And so, fellas, thanks for being on episode number one. I want to say right here as we wrap this up, and I want to be really clear for those that are coming over from the podcast that I was a host on for 6 years, the Recovering Fundamentalist podcast. I'm glad you're here. I really am. But I want you to know that this is going to be different, that this podcast is a different lane, if you will. As you heard over this last 45 minutes, this is not going to be a hype show or a debate stage. There's not going to be any King James Version wars or hot takes or theological cage matches that we spent 6 years getting beat up over. It's not going to be drama for downloads or crazy Christian content for connections. This podcast is going to be built not to deconstruct, to dunk, or debate for clicks, but it's a podcast with a mission that has one difference. Following the Way isn't about tearing things down. It's about building up. It's about becoming more like Jesus. It's not about platforms or algorithms or outrage. It's going to be about formation and faithfulness and obedience to Jesus. Now, sure, there's some overlap in the audience of you who are coming from Recovering Fundamentalist podcast, but the direction is different. Same heart for people, same love for truth, very different assignment. And so if you're looking for a space with spice and controversy and internet Christianity, this probably won't be the show for you. But if you are hungry for actually following Jesus to be shaped, not just informed, to live a life that holds up, not just online, but when rubber meets the road, when life gets heavy, this is the show for you. And I'm excited that you're here. Here's the truth that I want to leave with you today as we wrap up episode number one. Jesus didn't come just to get you out of hell. He came to rescue you. He came to set you free. He came to form you into something new. And as we've talked about, it takes both the rescue and the following, the rescue and the formation. He didn't just offer forgiveness, but he offers a whole new way of living. He doesn't say, just agree with me. He says, follow me. And following him is not about perfection. It's about direction. It's not about pretending you have arrived. It's about understanding that again and again, we're walking the way of Jesus. We're going to stress this over the course of this podcast, that formation is slow. It is oftentimes hidden. It is costly, but this is how real change happens. And so wherever you are right now, burned out, no hope, skeptical, hungry, Maybe you're full of hope. Maybe you're following Jesus. You've said yes to him and you're white hot. Hear this, you are invited, not to a program, not to a performance, but to a person, to a way of life. Freedom is where grace meets you. Formation is where love remakes you. And this journey, this way is never meant to be walked alone. And don't just listen. Don't just agree. Don't just admire Jesus from a distance. Follow him one step, one choice, one surrendered yes at a time. And it's going to be a fun journey as together we follow the way of Jesus. Chris, James, episode number one. After 8 months of texting and trying to do this, we finally did it. Episode number one is in the books, and I'm looking forward to what is ahead.
Appreciate it, JC. Glad it's after football season.
Yeah, yes.
We did it.
We're going to pause. We're going to pause during football season, so we won't be back. Go Noles. All right.
Go Blue.
Go Michigan. What even is y'all's mascot? I don't even know.
Wolverine.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
Irrelevant. Oh, ours is a bird.
No, yours is a seagull.
No, it's an ibis. And they're like the chicken of the swamp, man.
We have a real man. We have a Seminole. We're actually a tribe. All right, we're out of here. God bless. We'll see you next time on Following the Way podcast.